BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, this is the Farming Today podcast with me, Charlotte Smith. In this episode, rain, rain, and yet more rain.
We think the grass will be dead, it'll be black, and we'll have no grass for the cattle to turn out on.
Dogs in the countryside.
I can't explain how awful it is to see a sheep that you've, you know, reared, you've looked after, you've lambed, and there she is lying with her throat pulled out. It is grim.
And new labelling rules, which, some say, don't make sense.
We reckon it's about £300,000 just to change the packaging. They're looking at timelines of October this year. It's crazy, because it's just not possible.
More on all that later. Let's start, though, with the rain. Flooded and waterlogged farmers are asking what's happened to the government's Farming Recovery Fund. As you may remember, it was announced after Storm Henk back in January and offered up to £25,000 to farmers towards the clean-up after the storm. Well, since then, the rain has kept on falling. February was the fourth wettest on record in England, and the Met Office says the UK had 27% more rain than average in March, but no sign of the fund. Stephen Watkins runs a mixed arable and vegetable farm in Worcestershire, parts of which are alongside the River Severn and parts of which are still underwater.
Both of the two big storms we've had since Christmas have actually put the river so high that it's come over our levee. So we have about 4 miles of river frontage at Sheepcote Farm, and when it comes over, it's a major exercise to then stop it with a second levee to stop it getting into the farm buildings and into the village.
I mean, you are farming on a floodplain, so it can't be that much of a surprise.
The frequency is now a surprise to overtop twice in that sort of short period of time. So historically, the river would come up very slowly, but now, to give you an indication, it's come up half a metre in the last 8 hours, and that's the sort of speed that it rises.
This fund is just for people affected by Storm Henk, so will you be able to get particular money from it, do you think?
I would hope so. The biggest barrier to these funds, and we've had them in the past, is when they first came out, it was relatively easy to apply for them. Then the next time they came out, there's a lot more bureaucracy. And now it's got to the point where it's now impossible, simply because you're required to get 3 quotes for everything. So I've got approximately 10 miles, and I mean 10 miles, of flood rubbish to pick up. Most of it is not mine. It's trees, it's caravan steps, it's plastic kiddies' kitchens, it's gas bottles, it's telegraph poles that have come from the caravan parks north of me, and it's dumped it on the farm. I have to pay for that, but to try and get 3 quotes for that sort of activity, and it's just ridiculous that we're in that situation.
Farmer Stephen Watkins there. Well, the Country Land and Business Association is pushing for the fund to be opened. Victoria Vivian is CLA president.
Well, it would be a really nice idea if they opened the applications and started handing out the money, I think. We're not looking to blame anybody. We just, our members and the farmers who are waiting for this money or waiting to be able to apply for the money, just have no sense of what's going on.
Well, DEFRA told us that the fund will open imminently to provide grants of up to £25,000 to eligible farmers to return their land to the condition it was in before the exceptional flooding caused by Storm Henk. So imminently. Well,
there are some soon. Crucial words in there. The first one is, of course, imminent. I think I probably have a different sense of what is imminent to DEFRA in this particular case. And the other is, how long do we have to wait to know who's eligible?
This is, DEFRA, make clear, just for people affected by Storm Henk. I mean, obviously, it's been very wet. We've been reporting on it what seems like months and months now. But that, a lot of rain, is just part of farming life.
We're not going to the government endlessly with a begging bowl saying, you have to support us, you have to support us. But this is not a one-off event. These exceptional events, as they used to be called, now have become regular events. There's so much that needs to be done, so much more effective planning that needs to be done and can be done by the Environment Agency and the farming community together.
We've spoken to farmers recently who have got floodwater on their land, and they say, frustrated as they are, they would be willing to accept that situation if in the future they were paid. Would you support that idea?
The longer answer to that is that they are delivering a public benefit. And for that public benefit, there's absolutely no reason why, for example, the Environment Agency, or indeed, although that wouldn't necessarily be in their remit, the water companies shouldn't be paying the farmers to do that. I don't know why they would have to do it for free. That seems an absurd suggestion.
Victoria Vivian from the CLA. Well, even fields that haven't been totally flooded are still very wet. At this time of year, farmers should be putting their cattle out to graze. But in many parts of the UK, it just hasn't stopped raining long enough for the fields to dry out. Farmers trying to plant crops are also being delayed by the weather, as it's too wet to get machinery into the fields. Here's beef farmer Hugh Tucker, who's been hoping to get his cattle out in Somerset.
This winter has been the worst I've ever known, and I've farmed here for roughly 70 years. The flooding on the moor here has been absolutely terrible. We've had 80% underwater. This is the AAT cattle we have. They're all Aberdeen Angus. We think the grass will be dead. It'll be black, and we'll have no grass for the cattle to turn out on. And it will be also be very soft, which we won't be able to use that for a good 2 months yet, I would think.
Hugh Tucker, well, he's not alone. I asked NFU Cymru Deputy President and dairy farmer Abby Reader how bad this spring has been.
It's been incredibly difficult. Just in my county alone, we've had 238% increase on rainfall based on this time last year. Trying to do the normal things that you would do at springtime, such as turning your livestock out, sowing more crops in the ground, has either become incredibly difficult or completely impossible. So really challenging for farmers at the moment.
And of course, that means if animals aren't going out, they're staying in and you've got to feed them. And that comes at a cost.
It does come at a cost. If you are lucky, then you will still have some feed in stock. If you're unlucky, then you are going to have to start going out and finding some that you can buy in. Prices on these are increasing all the time, likewise for bedding. It's an enormous challenge. We're also seeing the weather is a little bit warmer, so stock inside the sheds at this time of year is not desirable for all sorts of reasons. It can be very uncomfortable as we hit this warmer weather.
Of course, there are areas which are low-lying. For instance, we just heard from that farmer in Somerset on the edge of the Levels. And in a sense, those fields are doing what they're supposed to do. They're absorbing this rainfall. They're keeping it out of villages, towns, cities.
They are. I think what we're hearing at the moment is a really extreme example of somebody who has now had their business impacted by a considerable amount of water. I mean, 4 foot of water on soil will cut out the air, the daylight. It will start to kill the soil organisms, the worms, cause a huge amount of compaction.
And of course, it will take time. You don't just need it to stop raining. You actually need some really dry weather to sort of dry up all this wet.
We do. We're going to need quite a bit of wind. The wind will be the most helpful, and obviously some warmth would be great. 4 or 5 days of some dry weather will get a lot of people up and running. But for people who have had some very serious amounts of flooding, it is going to take a lot longer to sort these issues out and to try and get everybody back onto an even keel. And that's whether you are with dairy cows waiting to turn out, whether you've got young lambs that you want to turn out, or whether you're desperately trying to get these crops in the ground.
Farmer Abby Reader from the National Farmers Union. Well, in the breaks between the showers, you might have been heading out into the countryside for a walk. All this week on Farming Today, that's the programme which goes out every weekday morning here on BBC Radio 4 at 5:45, or you can catch up on BBC Sounds. We've been investigating the UK's footpaths, and the biggest talking point has been dogs. According to new figures from the insurers, NFU Mutual, more than £900,000 worth of farm animals were injured or killed by dogs last year, and that's in Wales alone. Charlotte Llewellyn farms beef cattle and sheep on the outskirts of Cardiff, where walkers often let their dog off the lead while using footpaths through the land. Marie-Claire Carey-Jones has been to meet her.
The footpath comes down that hedge and then crosses, keeps on going down, right across the middle of the field. We have a huge number of people walking across this farm. We have footpaths on every field apart from three. But unfortunately, people do not keep to the footpaths. They like to walk where they want to walk. And don't get me wrong, this isn't everybody. It's the minority. But that minority caused me an awful lot of stress and trouble, basically. And most people that are walking across the farm would say they are animal lovers. They want to come out in the countryside. And yet they can't respect the fact that this is the livestock's home.
And we're standing in your barn at the moment where your lambs are. At this time of year, is the problem even worse?
Dogs actually are always bad all through the year. This time of year, it's more traumatic, obviously, because you've got young lambs can easily get separated from their mothers. If a dog comes into a field, those lambs then can die from being separated from their mothers, from hypothermia, from not having enough milk.
if the sheep are attacked, it is so traumatic. I can't explain how awful it is to see a sheep that you've reared, you've looked after, you've lambed, and there she is lying with her throat pulled out. You know, it is grim.
Sheep farmer Charlotte Llewellyn there. Well, this really got you talking, and producer Heather's here to help me go through our bulging inbox. Heather.
Hi, Charlotte. Yeah, let's start with Matthew Steers. He says, I believe the time has come to reintroduce the dog licence in the UK. It will also help to fund local authority costs associated with collecting dog waste bins. He says, mandatory public liability insurance for dog owners would be a good step forward too.
Well, Alan Pike agrees. He described himself as a walker and a dog lover, but says the dog-owning public have developed a disproportionate sense of entitlement regarding their dog's behaviour and access rights. So we need a licensing system and punitive penalties for dog attacks of whatever kind. Dog ownership, he says, should be a privilege and a responsibility, not a right without consequences.
This email points out that it's not just livestock that can be disturbed or harmed by dogs. It's signed anonymous, but it says, in our area, the dog walkers have created their own footpaths over the farmland, flushing out the yellowhammers, meadow pipits, lapwings, skylarks, curlews. They go on climbing over dry stone walls, chasing the hares for fun, forcing their way through hedgerows, trampling over bluebells. When they can't be bothered to pick up the dog poo, it says, they leave the bags discreetly near the footpaths or, for some inexplicable reason, throw them in the bushes.
Well, here's a different point of view from Maurice Reed. He emailed to say nobody in their right mind would object to dogs being under control in the countryside. It's the insistence of their always being on leads which I object to. He goes on to say that he walks his dogs off the lead, and although they've never attacked sheep, he's found his local farmers to be surly, that's his word. He says they make it clear they resent our presence in the countryside, which they think belongs entirely to them. I suspect that this spring I will have yet more peaceful country walks spoilt by rude and angry farmers.
Well, several people also mentioned the danger caused to humans by livestock when walking in the countryside. Mr. Bartley said, you fail to emphasise just how dangerous this situation can be. I no longer take my dog walking on farmland anymore. He goes on, a work colleague of mine spent weeks in hospital following a cattle attack whilst walking his dog and required air ambulance transport to hospital. He was lucky to survive.
Well, it sounds like Margot Lunnan had a similar experience. She emailed about the danger of cows, saying, I copped 9 bust ribs, 2 collapsed lungs, 1 damaged liver and a week in hospital, to say nothing of weeks recovering. I fear we need to separate walkers and cows.
Gosh, sorry, Margot, that sounds horrible.
Well, thanks, Heather. Now, attacks on people by cattle are rare, but as we've heard, they do happen. So what can walkers do to keep themselves safe, and what can farmers do to prevent attacks like this? David Barton farms beef cattle in Gloucestershire and is chair of the National Farmers Union's Livestock Board.
We have a bridle path running through 2 of our fields, and we do graze that. Not that often, but we do graze it. And I just do a risk assessment, basically, of the cattle that I'm putting out there, the type of cattle, and making sure that I'm happy that those animals are not going to give any trouble, and it's going to be safe for everybody. Well, you know, the best that I can do. So I'm making a conscious effort to look at that and make sure that I've done the best I can on that regard. So that's what I would do personally.
Obviously, for the people who get attacked, it's appalling. What does it mean for the farmer if someone's attacked on their land?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be devastated. I've actually had that happen to me on the farm. I've been attacked by a cow, so I do fully understand how traumatic it is, and I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody. So I take a great deal more care than I used to after that incident, I can assure you. So, yeah, I mean, I would be devastated if that happened. The one thing that I can't control, and that is... cattle do get very upset with dogs. They're herd animals, and their natural instinct would be that's a predator, in effect. So it can sort of set them into a different sort of mode. So really got to be careful with dogs. If I was walking through a field with dogs, and we have dogs and we love walking, so we do that, I'd keep it on a tight lead very close to me. A dog running sort of 10 metres around you, it may be under control, but the cattle will see that, and probably that may well upset them more than if it's kept close to you on a lead. So I always, when we're walking and we come into a field of sheep or cattle, immediately dogs on a lead and walk them and keep them close to me. That's what we do. Obviously, if you get into a situation where things get out of hand and you feel threatened by the cattle, you let the dog go. Absolutely let it go.
Do you think farmers will have to consider fencing, either electric fencing or virtual fencing or an actual fence, to keep walkers and cattle separate?
I think that's an enormous challenge because, as I said, I only have two fields that I have to worry about with public access. But some farms will have public access going all the way, you know, all around them, and that would make it really challenging. I think that's nigh on impossible, to be honest.
Cotswold beef farmer David Barton there. Muddled, costly and unnecessary regulatory burdens. Well, that's the Food and Drinks Federation description of new labelling rules, which it says will cost food companies millions of pounds. From October, dairy and meat products for sale in Great Britain, that's England, Wales and Scotland, will have to have Not for EU on the packaging, just as products on sale in Northern Ireland have had since last year. The rules will be applied to other categories in phases. The government says the aim is to make sure that Northern Irish consumers have access to the same goods, as with the same labels, there isn't an incentive for companies not to sell in Northern Ireland. The FDF says it's unnecessary and could have grave and unintended consequences for the UK food and drink sector. Robert Graham from Graham's, the family dairy, says complying will cost his business hundreds of thousands of pounds and hit exports to the EU.
We have to change the packaging for every line we currently supply into GB. We have over 300 lines, so that's 300 different lines. We'll need to change the packaging on all of them at a cost of several hundred thousand pounds.
Why would you have to change the packaging? Couldn't you just get a sticker and add it to existing packaging?
Because it's a lot of units. We're talking about millions of units per week. It also means that for our export market, we'll need to use different packaging. So we have about 40 lines that we export into the EU, principally into Ireland, and we will need to have different packaging for them. And it adds a huge amount of complexity into the business, from packaging, storage, picking orders, distribution. Our export business is relatively small. It's about 5 million euros a year out of our total business of about 150 million. But it's still a good part of our business. But when we look at it by itself and adding complexity across 40 lines, then some of that will need to be looked at.
Have you worked out how much it might cost you?
We reckon it's about £300,000 just to change the packaging. That doesn't include the time, technical sign-off. And when you multiply that up across all the food companies across GB that are going to be impacted, then it's going to come to a very, very big number.
The government has just finished a consultation on this, and it says these measures will ensure that consumers in Northern Ireland have access to the same goods as those in the rest of the United Kingdom, safeguarding the UK internal market. It goes on to say that the consultation has just closed and they're analysing the feedback and will respond in due course and will consider exemptions and additional support, such as for small businesses. So I guess what they're saying is there's a reason behind all this.
But there already was a way we supply into Northern Ireland. There already was the Northern Ireland movement scheme, which was a bit bumpy at the start, but definitely was working. So to add this level of complexity that actually could deter exports from GB into EU, it's madness.
Now, the idea is that this will be phased in from October. Are you in any way ready?
I'm not sure many. We're certainly not ready for it. It is not possible for businesses to change that many lines in that time. And we have to remember that this regulation, these rules have not been published in full. We're still going through consultation. The very fact that they're looking at timelines of October this year is crazy, because it's just not possible.
Robert Graham. Well, alongside the new labelling rules, the government has revealed many imports of meat, food and plant products from the EU will face charges of up to £29 per product as a result of new post-Brexit arrangements. The long-delayed price regime could even see small mixed consignments of things like fish, yoghurt and salami facing a charge as high as £145. Ministers say the charges will fund necessary inspections. Food trade groups say food prices will rise. Here's the BBC's economics editor, Faisal Islam.
The previously free-flowing, frictionless trade with Europe in food and ingredients was always going to change as a result of the relatively distant approach to EU relations adopted by the government after Brexit. This part of the change, introducing a charge per line item to fund border inspections, has been repeatedly delayed. From the 30th of this month, the common user charge will now be introduced from £10 to £29 for every different animal or plant product from the EU deemed medium or high risk. This applies for small or large consignments up to a maximum charge of £145. The aim is to fund new inspection facilities in Kent to protect biosecurity, preventing the import of plant and animal disease. Food industry bodies said the decision was certain to raise food prices, with the Cold Chain Federation saying the last-minute decision reflected a slapdash approach. The Horticultural Trade Association said the back-of-the-envelope decision increased the likelihood of empty shelves. Farming groups have, however, lobbied for the change in order to level the playing field for UK exporters to the EU. The government has previously acknowledged a cost in the hundreds of millions, which alongside other new border checks and red tape, could increase overall inflation by 0.2% over 3 years.
Faisal Islam. Well, Neil Alcock runs Seyont Nurseries in North Wales and imports plants from around the world. He says smaller businesses, like his, will be hardest hit.
We import a fair amount of very young plants which are used for growing on. Say now we were a much bigger business and we had a whole Arctic with just one commodity on, we just pay £29. We bring in small amounts in groupage, so we might just have a quarter of a wagon with lots of commodities on, so we pay the top end. It's the SMEs which pay the most. And in the UK, 97% of growers are SMEs.
What does it cost to import a plant on top of the cost of the actual plant?
Well, for our sort of commodities, we tend to bring in more than five, so we'll be on a maximum charge of £145 on the common user charge. But also, our plants all come in through the Port of Harwich, which is privately owned. And for that, there's extra charges, which could be up to £681 if a wagon is unloaded for checking.
But these charges do pay, the government says, for the checks, which lots of businesses will say are absolutely needed because of biosecurity.
We always buy very responsibly and we're part of a trusted trader scheme. So a lot of our plants come from the highest hygiene nurseries and laboratories. And there was no problem with plant health before Brexit. It's the same sort of status then as it is now. Just we have these extra layer of charges. Because we also pay now on our imports, we're paying for, say, a Dutch phyto certificate as well, which is another €250.
Will you be able to pass on, do you think, some of these charges to your customers?
We have to try. The biggest customers do resist any increases or any significant increases. As an industry, we're already very lean, we're very efficient, but there's no big margin to go at, really. So, yeah, we at some point we will have to pass these charges on. I mean, these charges just announced this week. We've already sold a lot of plants into the marketplace, not knowing what the final cost will be on our product.
So you've already arranged to import something, arranged to sell it on before it's arrived, and now you're going to be out of pocket because you didn't expect to be paying that import charge on it as well.
Yeah, because our biggest customers, as I say, we're working up to 2 years ahead with some customers, so we're definitely a year ahead on some. You can't go back to the customer and say, oh, excuse me, can I charge you 3% or 4% more?
There are charges going the other way if you're exporting into the EU, so it is sort of levelling up the playing field in a sense, isn't it?
I think it is, because also we're exporters. So here's a scenario for you. Before Brexit, we used to export 18% of our product. And in 2021, that went down to 2%. And that's when our customers in the EU realised they had to pay all the inspection charges there. It costs our customers up to €580 per consignment to clear a load into the EU. Now we have this coming the other way. I fear certain sectors, certain suppliers might just turn their backs on the UK because it's too costly and too awkward to have shipped to, because they have the rest of the EU to ship.
Neil Alcock, and that's it from us. I'm Charlotte Smith. The studio manager is Susie Robbins, and the producer in Bristol is Heather Simons.